Yeah, I'm seated here. Now, that's moving well. With Mrs. Leola Spann. Now, where are we at this moment?
Well, we're at the Northwest Austin Council. We're at 5758 West Potomac, and I'm the director of the Northwest Austin Council.
And this is in a church?
Yes, this is in the basement of the St. Angela's Rectory.
And you're the director of what?
Of the Northwest Austin Council.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've been here since 1985. It was not my intentions of becoming a director of an organization when I came here. I was asked to come here by the president of my block. She said that Miss Lisi, which were the director at that time, were ill, and asked if I had some spare time that I could come in and take the message and answer the telephone. So that's sort of how I got to be here in the first place.
I'll ask you about that going on exactly in the block where you were and how you got to be this. First of all, who is Leola Spann? How would you describe yourself?
Okay. I'm a woman. I'm 56 years old. I have three children. Was raised here in the city of Chicago. Three daughters. One is now a nurse at, she's a chemotherapist at the Loyola University. I have one daughter that is a secretary at Norfolk, Virginia. One daughter who's in Jackson, Mississippi, which is a great social worker, I'll call her, because she loved people. So I'm basically, I live, my mother and I live together. I came here from the South in 1954. I love the South, but I came here because of the jobs, like most people that come from the South. And I've been here ever since. I went back home in 1974.
Where?
Natchez, Mississippi.
Natchez, Mississippi.
Yes, I was born there. I went back in 74. My grand that raised me was losing eyesight, and I went back and taking care of her until she passed. That this time, my children are all grown. So after her passing, I came back to the city because my children are here and my family's here. So that is really where I am, you know, this is why I'm back in Chicago. I like the city. It's a very different place than any place I've ever been. There are a lot of problems here. When I first moved to the West Side, when I first came here, I was at
54. You were 20 years old.
Yeah. I was at Jackson and Washington. I'd like to talk about that a little.
I want you to be absolutely free.
I lived at 2703 West Jackson Boulevard. At that time, the area was predominant white at that time. And I now have lived to see that area become a ghetto. That's a fact.
Come what?
A ghetto. That area. When I moved there, it was a really nice neighborhood. My children went to Most Precious Blood, Our Ladies of Sorrow. I moved as the area began to depreciate. I moved from there to Independence Boulevard around 58. I moved to Independence Boulevard. I stayed there until around 61. And as the area still, that was a beautiful area when I moved there. It was a predominant white area. I think I was guilty of what we all are very guilty of, continually moving because of the deterioration of the communities. You keep moving, you keep moving. So it brings me to where I am now. I'm in the North Austin area, which my daughter went to Austin High School in 69, which at that time was a predominant white school. We had a lot of problems there. I had never seen a mob of whites until that time. And at the school, there were, I would say, maybe 400 to 500 whites protesting the black children going to Austin High School.
What year was that roughly?
1968 or 69. which now is a predominant black school. But I thought to myself, I'm gone as far as I'm going to go. And when I got...
Three times?
Yes, yes. And when I got here in this Austin community, which is a very nice neighborhood, it's basically single family dwellings. The housing stock is excellent. And so I said, now, and getting involved with the community organization gave me a different insight. And I said, now, I'm going to have to fight for this community. I'm not going any further, you know. There's no sense in saying that a community cannot stabilize and really continue to be the community because of redlining and realtors redlining and stuff and scare tactics. But a community can still be good. And that's the reason I'm here, and that's the reason I am working with this organization. And we're very, one of the main things that we work here is foreclosure counseling and pre-purchase counseling. Foreclosure, keeping people in their homes and counseling people, first homeowners, because people don't know how to own a home unless they're educated before they get into these homes. These homes have a lot of problems, and when you're just borderline, when you go into that first home and you don't have a lot of money in the first place, if you got a bad roof, you're in big trouble. And then you've got these contractors that goes around in the community and says, well, I can give you instant credit and I can get this roof for you $10,000, and here's this person, he's burdened down now with a second mortgage. Now he's really facing foreclosure, no doubt about it. So we're here trying to educate people. When you buy that first home, possibly you're eligible for the city programs for a roof, if need be. There are other avenues besides getting that $10,000 contractor. So this has given me
that's
a
contract buying, isn't it? That's called contract buying.
No, that's what you call contractors. It's fraudulent, really. It's abuse. It's what you call really abuse. And then, you know, you hear this stuff. You hear people say, well, why does that neighborhood go down as soon as blacks move in? You know why it goes down? Because, number one, when a black person buys a home, most times he has just enough monies to put on that house, the down payment, and the closing costs. Now, if he has any type of repair, he has a problem because he don't have that surplus money, that capital money sitting there. So he can't do the repairs. And if he goes out there and get the repairs, he's got a second mortgage. Now he stands to lose the house. So now you got another boarded house in the community. So that is the reason, because actually, it comes back to the same economic situation. That's why poverty goes down when blacks go in, because they don't have those dollars to put into repair, to put into landscaping. You know, it actually, you take turf bill is not that expensive, you wouldn't think. But when you got a family or turf bill that you put on a lawn,
oh, yeah.
You wouldn't think of it as being that expensive. But if you got a mother, a single mother with three children, she can't afford to go out there and pay $17 for that turf bill to make that lawn look beautiful. So it's little simple things like this that...
Turf bill.
Turf builder. It builds the lawn.
Oh, turf builder. I got it.
Okay.
This is great. No, this is... Tell about that woman again with her expenses. Yeah.
Yes. What I was saying was turf builder will cost approximately $17 or $19 a bag. But if you got a single mother that has three children that is trying to buy her first home, she can't afford that turf bill for that lawn. So you say, well, why is her lawn looking so bad? But it's just, it's little simple things like this that causes deterioration when blacks go into a community. Not that they don't want to, it's simply you can't afford it. It's just simply you can't afford it. So we need to educate people that there are programs out there. They are good programs, Stud. But the thing about it is, people don't know about them. They simply don't know about them because they don't know that Department of Housing has grants for roofs. And those are the kind of things that we deal with here in the organization.
That's what you deal with here. You
yes.
advise. So
yeah, we try to do
right
pre-purchase
now.
Counseling.
Where I'm sitting right now, a young mother of three kids moving to place, and she's growing frantic because she hasn't the money. She'd come in to see you?
Yes, and what we try to do is advise her where she's eligible for the programs through the Department of Housing, or try to set up a budget for her to work with her. I wish that we were able to do more, but we do not have the funds. Now, we lobbied for a program.
What's the name of the group again?
Northwest Austin Council.
Northwest
Austin. NAC. Let's say NAC.
NAC. And you're
yeah.
part of it.
Yeah. NAC.
You know, what's her name? Oh, active in Austin. Tenants' rights. You know, big woman. White woman.
Gail Sincar.
Gail.
Oh, huh. Gail. Yes, I've worked with
her. Is she connected with your group?
Well, we work from time to time.
Yeah.
We had a tour last week along with them.
But
and
back to what you were saying.
Yeah.
So this is what you do.
Yes. And well, you know, about the last 20 years, I know you've heard of it, and it's been in the paper, and Gail's a part of this. They've been talking about FHA abuse for 20 years now, abandoned housing. And you know, I'm wondering, you know, and they've been rehabbing and reselling. But is this the answer? So we came up here, the Northwest Austin Council, we sat down around the table and we said, well, now, we got files here 20 years ago where this organization was working with FHA abandonment. So, okay, now they've rehabbed and they've resold these houses. And that's not the answer. So we said, well, maybe educating the buyers is the answer. And working with people trying to keep them in their homes once they get in there. So that is a strategy that NAC came up with. So that's what we've been working towards.
So how did you, now, Leola Spann, how did you? You came, you were 20, and I wonder how you got to be this particular person who's up on this thing. So you came in, and you came in with your family.
Yes.
My husband in the West. Oh, you're
yes.
talking about the moving.
Yes, my husband and three children. We
and
lived.
What did he do?
He worked in a foundry, a West
foundry.
Lake City foundry. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where he worked. He made a fair living for us. You know, when we came here, we were property owners when we came to Chicago. As I said, we were young and we were looking for, we were paying off a home in Mississippi, which we did.
Mm-hmm.
And we rented here.
So how did you find Chicago when you came? I'll come back to you.
Okay.
How did you find Chicago in contrast? This is without 54 contrast to Natchez.
Well, being a Southerner, I had never One of the funny things, we had just bought, before I left Mississippi, we had just bought a little brick bungalow. And it was my first home, and I was just so excited about it. But my husband wanted to come here because he could get a better paying job. So I was really upset because this is my first home, and I'm just really excited about this cute little house. So I come here, and as I said, we were living at Jackson and Washington in a kitchenette. I had never seen a kitchenette in my life, and I think I must have cried for a month, you know, because living in this small little room and then this little bitty kitchen, and the sink was about as big as a face bowl to me at that time, and I thought this was the worst living I've ever seen in my life. You know, I wondered why people choose to live like this. It really was a blow to me. Chicago was not that exciting place I'd heard about all my life. Because
I always think of Chicago as heaven. How did you find race relations here?
Very bad, very bad. I don't think I had been, you know,